Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for Stage 10 of the Tour de France, the first stage after the first rest day yesterday. And wow, it is super hot in Europe at the moment, particularly in the middle of France and where we are. So yeah, we're feeling it with the riders as well. If they'd done the Pyrenees sort of early this week, it would have been at scorching temperatures, but it's like 38 degrees for this stage from Vulcania, which is the volcanic region near Clermont-Ferrand, to Issoire, what looks like a medium mountain, you know, Patrick Conrad breakaway, Marchisi breakaway of years past, Molleman breakaway type stage, 168Ks, just turned into an absolute slugfest. We've got Cat 3s and sort of 8Ks 5%, 6Ks 6%, 5Ks 5%, 7Ks 6% is the last major climb, about 28 kilometers from the finish. And over 3,000 meters down to Velmeters. But I thought this was nailed on break, Benji. But to the point where we could see the break form and then go and have a siesta, we weren't afforded that privilege today.
Yeah, no siesta for us. We had action from start to about 75% into the race. And then the final also had some sparking action left and right as well. So it was a good stage from the start. Like the first hour, I'll be honest already, was the best part of the race for me personally. The breakaway formation phase, I love seeing it usually because of the tactics involved. Now it was crazy. It was just chaos everywhere. Many attacks, including Wout van Aert multiple times, Matthias Kjellmose trying desperately to get in the breakaway, Julien Alaphilippe, so many riders trying, and then a seven-man group formed. Kwiatkowski, Ineos, Cavagna, Ioannis Aguirre, we've got Matteo Jorgensen, Nylens, Strong, and Charmik. Once again, the attacking Israel team, which I absolutely love this Tour de France and in the Giro, but the action came when the second group started forming because Jonas Vingegaard starts to slip into G2, a group behind the first group. Mika then decides to bridge Pogacar to that group. Yates and Bardet are there. What were you thinking?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the producers were none the wiser. They literally had no idea this was going on, so we didn't see a lot of this on TV at all from the helicopter because I saw Vingegaard slipping, and my immediate reaction was Pogacar's attacked.
Yeah,
because that's normally what happened in the second and third week of the Tour de France last year. But this year, or today, it was the opposite. Vingegaard trying to slip in Hindley style. He only had Kuss in that move with him. It's not like he had Van Aert up the road, so it was never really going anywhere for either of them. Like, I don't know. I think he was. I don't really know what he was trying to do apart from just see what happened. Maybe he was trying to be a patron and shut down the... The counter move? I don't think so.
The new Danish patron, but yeah. I agree with that. I didn't seem fully realistic that that group would make it, although the gap at a certain point was 40 seconds. The thing is, though, Hindley slipped in being a Bora rider that looks a lot like the other Bora riders in Bora kit. This guy's wearing the yellow jersey and tried to slip in, so exactly hiding very well. He's like that meme with the dude standing behind a tree, but he's like twice the size of the tree. That's what it looked like. Vingegaard in the breakaway, but it was fun to see, and it was curious to me that UAE had the upper hand when it comes to the amount of riders in the group, two riders while Vingegaard had Kuss there, if I recall correctly, and UAE seemed to try to keep that going even when part of that group started attacking.
I didn't, so this is where it got really confusing to me, because as you said, this group got 40 seconds behind, I can't remember who was in the break, Benji, like Nylens, remember that?
Yeah.
Chris Nylens, solo initiated being in this move ahead. And it wasn't the first or the second or the last. So Chris Nylens is ahead already, and it's full kicking off behind, and he's riding full in a group ahead. The gap went to 40 seconds to the peloton, though, Benji, not because of Vingegaard or Kuss. UAE's pacing. And it didn't make sense to me because Vingegaard, okay, he's got Kuss in the group. He's got teammates behind. Jumbo weren't chasing behind. It was basically Mika riding against Bora because Yates, as you mentioned, Simone Felipe, is in the group just behind Hindley on GC. So it's UAE riding with Vingegaard in the wheel, just the same as Pogacar, to keep Bora and Ineos behind. So it didn't really, and always, Bora and Ineos are going to chase you for the rest of this stage if you have Yates and Bardet with you. And so then the Pog attacked to the break, Benji, the group ahead. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And then I was actually, maybe he was trying to gap Simon Yates to stop Bora and Ineos chasing, because the top two are so far ahead of the others that if they just do their own thing ahead, Bora and Ineos won't chase. So maybe that's why he did it. But yeah, frenetic start. I think it was kind of everyone just seeing, I don't know, it was a bit of a pissing contest, actually. Like, no, we can put pressure on you. No, we, like, it was crazy. Yeah. And then that brought the break back before the second climb. Or then Wout van Aert did a huge nuclear bridge when that eventually was brought back.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Like you said, that group that tried getting away from Pogacar and Vingegaard, even with Pogacar and Vingegaard being behind, with the GC riders being behind, that GC rider group got called by the peloton again, but also the break that was ahead, like you mentioned. So we just were back into square one. Mankies, who was trying to get in the breakaway to slip into top 10, back in the peloton. Everybody back in the peloton. And it kind of was that for half an hour from that point, with people attacking left and right, trying to do stuff again. Wout van Aert, like you said, tried to bridge to a breakaway at a certain point, and it was just chaos all over the road. But eventually, we saw behind the peloton some stuff, because while all this shit was happening, a lot of riders were in trouble. Obviously, Jakobsen dropped one of the first riders in because he's a flat sprinter, so he obviously has some trouble with these brutal starting moments in these breakaway stages. But also, a group with Wout van Aert, who had been trying to get in the break six times before, 2 minutes behind at a certain point, with none other than Romain Bardet, who was also in the breakaway earlier, and David Gaudu with Madua, who was called back from the front of the race all the way to the back of the race to help out Gaudu. What was Demar thinking?
I mean, yeah, Arnaud Demar with a wry smile on his face. I mean, maybe he's just gone. I hope he's gone on holiday and he's not even watching this, because, yeah, they're at 2 minutes, Bardet and Gaudu, and FDJ have set up a seven-man train with poor old Stephen Kung, who hasn't gotten a break, I don't think, so far this Tour de France, to basically chase and bring it back. And, you know, listen, you have to keep chasing, and you know, if you want Gaudu to top 10, it's the right thing to do, because once the break forms, eventually it will calm down. But, yeah, like, just absolute chaos. And it meant that the break didn't go properly till really the third climb, 66 Ks into the stage, maybe even longer, really, because a certain point now, if I can remember correctly, Benji, there was Chavez. If I've missed anything, let me know. Yep. But there was Chavez, Asgreen, Bilbao, Schelmoser, Zimmermann, Schultz, Barguil. So, of course, we've missed some attacks. You know, we can't say every attack, but that's group one. 20 seconds behind, just before the category two climb, which is 6K, 6%. Not something to be trifled with, particularly when, you know, Asgreen against Chavez, Bilbao, Schelmoser, like, they can drop him on that if they wanted to. 20 seconds behind that group is Kwiatkowski, who wants a stage win, Alaphilippe, the teammate of Asgreen, O'Connor, wanting maybe GC time plus a stage, Perez, Pedrero, Nalens, the teammate of Schultz, and Tejada. So you look at Alaphilippe there behind Benji, Asgreen ahead. To me, it's clear that neither should pull. Yep. Maybe if one is to pull, it's Alaphilippe to come back. But Asgreen in a group of climbers, Chavito, as I said, should not pull that break and should sit on so that Alaphilippe can come back easier. And he was pulling and got dropped when Bilbao went to the front and started driving it. Because the break, by the way, Jumbo was setting a weird pace. I couldn't, like, were they doing the modern thing where you start riding immediately so you don't need to bring a gap down?
Mate, what was this stage, man? Like,
it's so much weird stuff.
Half of the things we mentioned so far were like, what the fuck happened there?
Yeah.
Now, this breakaway group actually got the gap to be called the breakaway group. Unlike the breakaway groups before, this was one that would sustain for quite a long time, maybe even until the finish. And like you say, they were part of two groups, and it took a while for those groups to come together. But eventually, Alaphilippe and Asgreen did find their friendship and did find their presence together in a larger group of 14 riders, if I recall correctly. Maybe one of them had been dropped at that point. But a minute 40 plus to the peloton, went to 2 minutes 30, went to, I think, to 45, 3 minutes at a certain point. And like you say, the Jumbo Visma control, not actually sure where that came from. That being said, when it comes to Alpecin taking over, that was intriguing, because That was at a moment where the group with Godu and so forth had come back. They had rejoined the peloton, but also the likes of Philipsen is back. So Philipsen's back and thinks, okay, there's like two climbs left in this race. Maybe I've got a chance of winning this. Who knows? So Alpecin goes to the front and decides, let's try some stuff ourselves and see if we can take the stage. But the gap went from 4 minutes to 2:45 until, yeah, they tried something different, huh?
Dude, it was just, I just don't understand what was going on in this stage. And listen, it's fucking hot. Like, I really want people to understand how hot this was. And, you know, commentary was saying guys are having 3 bidons an hour. The DSs, by the way, they're cooking too. I mean, they got nice cars, Skodas, BMWs, whatever, but they're cooking in the heat too. And radios might not be working. They can't see. You know, sometimes the directors don't have mobile coverage for periods of half an hour. But yeah, I don't know, Benji. I mean, I thought, sorry, did you say the group came back together? I'm also frightened.
Yeah.
The group comes back together. But a quick step of, yeah, it's a bit of a disaster class for a moment where it looked like neither Asgreen nor Alaphilippe would get in the break when he got dropped by the pure climbers on that climb. They're lucky he came back, but how much energy was it? I thought, now the situation is, does Bilbao want the stage or the GC? Or does he want a Hindley and to have both? Or a Ben O'Connor and to have both? And in fact, Jens Voigt, he, I think, was speaking to Roman Kreuziger, and Kreuziger said, yeah, I actually don't know the answer to your question, Jens. Either or would be good. So I don't really know what his plan was. O'Connor's on 14 minutes. I think he just wanted the stage. And Israel, obviously, they had a really good card to play with both Nalens and Schultz. So, yeah, it was a good group, Benji, and actually a really strong one. And who did you think would, whose job was it to control this break? Because that swung multiple times during this stage, and actually the peloton itself didn't know whose responsibility it was. Whose job was it, in your mind, if you're a DS of X?
From the peloton?
Yeah, whose job is it to control Bilbao? Or if does he need controlling at all?
Well, the people that are personally in danger and feel like they're endangered by Bilbao and GC are the ones that are going to start pacing. But outside of that, Alpecin tried for the stage win for a tiny bit. But outside of that, no one has really a necessity. It's not like Jumbo needs to control Bilbao, who's like 17 decades back in GC, like 7 minutes and so forth. So it's not necessarily on them either. So I didn't see the value of Jumbo controlling too much, but I'm also understanding that they don't want to give him 70 minutes either. But it was very early that they started controlling. And then I understood when, I think, was it DSM that started pacing at a certain point? Like, those I understood. Ineos, I somewhat understand if their GC positions is being threatened and so forth. They probably feel bad that they've only got Kwiatkowski in the break when maybe not more chances for the stage when it, like, three riders or two riders in the break. But anyway, like, we get to the point where...
But round that point off, Cummings was on the race radio. This is the first bit of, like, one of the most interesting things. I'm not sure if you saw it. And he said to the guys, we don't need to pull. Bora need to pull. And I was thinking, why would Bora need to pull? Because Pidcock and Rodriguez are above him on GC, and Bilbao's on 7.5 minutes. He's closer to 7th and 4th on GC. So Bora never going to pull.
Exactly. So that statement made no sense to me. 100%. That's for certain. But like, we then saw a situation. We're in the descent, basically, now. We're in a descent towards the last climb. And we see that Alpecin and Jumbo are starting to realize. Jumbo probably realizes we don't actually need too hard to control this stage anymore.
They pegged it at 350.
Yeah, 330. Exactly. And then Alpecin realizes, well, I can't close this shit down. We got it down to 245 afterwards, Alpecin. And then they realize, okay, this gap is unbearable for us to cross. So Wout and Van der Poel go on a bit of an adventure. And
dude,
your face, man.
And Durbridge had been pulling for Simon Yates GC, for Jayco, which, you know, was fine because, you know, they were like, they wanted it under 3 minutes. They didn't want Bilbao leapfrogging Simon Felipe. But Van der Poel did this on the breakaway stage the other day, Benji. When was he in the break when he had no chance? In the Pyrenees. He was in the break. Tourmalet, I think. He was in the break. And off the descent of Col d'Aspin, he just whacked it. And
that I
That made more sense to get ahead. Of course, he should never have been in the break in the first place, but that made more sense. Here, it's like, why were you pulling? You guys, they took a lot into the out of the gap, Benji. Alpecin, they took a minute out of the gap, or with the help of Durbridge. And then over the descent, he attacks. Now, the only explanation is they got to the top of the final climb, or that climb, no, it's not the final climb, that second last climb. Philipson said, I don't have it. And to be honest, I was very surprised they were pacing in the first place because I never thought he would make it because it's been such a hard day. You could say, oh, it's 6K, 6%, he could make it. No, that's ignoring the context of the stage, the heat. He's never making it, I don't think. Maybe Philipson said, I don't have it, just fuck around on the front. Wout's in his wheel because Jumbo were just behind being safe and Van der Poel was pacing. And then Wout relays with him. I was like, what?
Mate. He
tried to get in the break with a bridge, dropped himself at the start, and this would have been a big stage he targeted, and then came back with the Guru group that got dropped, then was pacing on the front like Nath and Van Hooydonk would behind a break to keep the gap stable, and then is relaying with Van der Poel 20 seconds ahead of the peloton and 2.5 minutes behind the breakaway, which has better climbers than both of them. Like, much better. Like,
we have to talk about the rumor here for a second. This morning on Danish TV, Skjelm also mentioned that there's a rumor going on in the peloton. Well, we knew what rumors in the peloton do. For example, in the Giro, we had a rumor that Primoz had COVID, for example. But this is also a rumor right now, not that Wout has COVID, but that he's going home tomorrow. That's the rumor in the peloton, that he's going home tomorrow. We heard before the Tour de France that he might go home at some point because of his wife or girlfriend having a kiddo. And, well, that's rumor that's ongoing. But regardless of that rumor, he's riding like someone who doesn't need to race anymore tomorrow.
He's having a weird Tour de France. I think not winning yet is getting to him.
I don't know. Like, the way he raced looks a lot like someone who will exit the race tonight. Like, the rumor might be bullshit, but it looks like that.
I agree. Him and Van der Poel is like, what are you doing? And when Van Hooydonk was pacing, so to take it back, when the break had formed, and Jumbo went to control and Van Hooydonk started pacing, I thought, are Jumbo now going to pace for the stage win for Van Aert in a reduced group sprint?
Uh-huh.
I thought, is that... And then that obviously wasn't the case when... And that was what was weird, because that would make sense. And then him pulling the flat like that, I was like, that, mate, that's very... I've never seen that before. Wout van Aert being a domestique, getting in a breakaway to be a satellite rider. We've seen that before. Wout van Aert pulling the flat when someone's been dropped. We've seen that before. But pulling behind a breakaway, we've not seen him in that role before. So that's unusual. I think the only rationale is he kept pulling on this because he is a much better climber than Van der Poel. And he wanted to get over this last 6K, 6% climb ahead of, or give himself a chance to be in the final with the Jumbo-Visma group to keep Jonas safe, whatever, and that he'd have a better chance than because if UAE or someone drive it, he'll get dropped. Van der Poel, Benji, literally got a cane to the climb and stopped.
That was the wiser decision than Wout just staying there for another, was it 5 to 10 minutes, in my opinion?
No, because then he was there for Jonas in the final, if that made any difference.
Yeah, but he might still have been there regardless, because it's not like the peloton was storming
over
there.
I think he had bad legs.
Really? Okay. But well, after what happened earlier on the stage, very possible. But regardless of what's happening here, the peloton's not going to make it. It's starting to become clear. The peloton's not making it. And we see the front group. And when we go back to the front group, like, yeah, there's been some moves, some skirmishes. We had Alaphilippe do something, a little climb there. And he didn't drop afterwards. So that was a good sign.
Yeah. But, Chavez.
Yep, exactly. Chavez went for an attempt for a 58-kilometer solo, which didn't end up working. But 85, okay. I thought it was 58.
85 Ks to go. Chavez attacked on a climb behind it with a group behind. I was like, bro, you're a 57-kilo Colombian, sits upright on the bike. You're not going to ride 85 Ks solo,
mate,
in medium mountain terrain.
You got to understand it, my friend. Vader said that every single F rider is trying to hunt for KOM points. And
he was.
Now,
it's like 1 point. It's not him leading it. It's powerless.
Yeah, that's what they said. He said that they don't like having multiple leader strategies, only for KOM now, basically.
That doesn't make any sense. It's not a cumulative award. It's not a team award.
And they've got one rider, I think, in the top 15 places in KOM.
And Gall wasn't in the break.
Nah, Gall wasn't in the break. Anyway, regardless of what's happening there, we get to the point where action might actually start happening in the peloton, which is the last climb where, in the breakaway, sorry, that was the last climb, and we see the Aussie man, Nick Schultz, coming to the fore, bamming on his wheels, and that's a weird sentence, but
he smashed it.
He let out Chris Nylund, and even when he was doing the lead out, people were suffering in that group. Yeah. Kwiat had trouble. Alaphilippe had trouble and jumped back to the wheel at the end of the group, but then the man launched it.
This was a huge lead out from Nick Schultz, who got picked up. He was supposed to go to BNB last year. He lost the photo to Mijev. I got to do my full spiel for my Aussie from Brisbane. He lost the photo finish to Mijev, to Magnus Cort, and then, yeah, struggled to get a contract really late last year because of the BNB collapse, and Israel gave him a contract. And he's extended with them too after, I think, top 10 in Andalusia. He's got a good sprint on him. Now, this guy's been good in some of the MISC Spanish sort of 1-1s, the hilly ones. This is really good terrain for him, and he's good in hot conditions. Nylund has attacked before this point. By the way, he's already done a Fuga de la Fuga, and they've caught him before this point. Hey. Like, Nylund has already attacked, and he was initiating break formation at the start. He was, like, the strongest person in the entirety of break formation, and they're doing a full lead out, launching him. And I thought, wouldn't it be better? This is full hindsight talking. When Nylund's attacked off Schultz pacing and dropped Bilbao, I said he's going to win this stage by a minute. So that's what I said in real time. So now I'm going to go to my hindsight podcast self. In hindsight, with the 26Ks to the finish, which were a lot grippier, more flat than I really understood, they probably could have kept two in a group of six, Benji, if they played it a little bit differently. And Schultz has got a decent old sprint on him too. But instead they played the Nylund's long ranger card. That's just what they could have done differently. He also could have won. Because today, group two syndrome didn't exist, which was actually amazing.
Yeah, that's true. And it's odd because initially I thought group two syndrome is going to start existing again. And Nylund takes it that way. But I think the hindsight take is also taking in mind that the group two syndrome didn't happen today, because this one was one of the most cooperative second groups in races I've seen, with the likes of Bilbao, with the likes of Zimmermann. Alaphilippe was not in that group. Skelm wasn't either. They were in group three, for example.
Who were working roughly well too.
Five riders. Is Aguirre there as well?
Yeah, they were back.
O'Connor?
O'Connor, Pedrero, Zimmermann, Bilbao, and Chavez. And so Pedrero, Chavez, not winning a sprint ever. And so it was curious that, no one skipped turns, because normally someone will start skipping and say, listen, I need to conserve, because when we catch this guy, I need energy to counterattack, because I can't. Zimmermann won that Dauphiné sprint against Bergodeau, bike lengths and bike lengths. Bill Bowers won reduced group sprints many, many times in World Tour races.
Yeah.
He's very fast. So the majority of that group could not go to a sprint because there were two guys, Zimmermann and Bilbao, who were going to win the sprint. So, they were so cooperative. And Nylund is hanging out there, also counting against him. The descent wasn't that technical, and it was really a pedaling descent. And so you got O'Connor. O'Connor's a good descender. Him and Bilbao just sending this descent, pedaling, getting super aero. The group has a huge advantage. And they claw it back. And you can just see the seconds go from, it was 40 at one point, and it goes down by a second, just like drip feeding. What's the thing when you turn a sand thing and it counts time? Like when just the
you
drops.
Turn a sand thing and it counts time. What the
sand
fuck are
drops,
you talking about?
Drops. And then it the sand gradually drops. That was the seconds coming down for Nylund. And eventually gets caught, Benji, with only like 3.5-4 Ks to go. And at this point, I thought group Alaphilippe with Kwiatkowski, which was on 22 seconds, they might come back because everyone would stop working. What did
an
you
hourglass.
Think?
An hourglass.
Yeah, yeah. Did the YouTube comments give you that one?
No, I Googled it.
Off my description. Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible that you got it from my description. Well, yeah, I actually thought Kwiatkowski and Alaphilippe had a real chance to win this. I think counting against them was the fact that they caught Nylund so late that immediately when they caught Nylund, O'Connor throws in a big dig. And then this is the curious thing, Benji. Zimmerman throws in a big dig. Didn't trust his sprint.
Yep, that is correct. Zimmerman goes in with that move after O'Connor got caught. And to be honest, like, it was a good moment to make that move. Bilbao had already responded to O'Connor, so maybe 50% of the chance, he will not respond to the next attack.
Yeah.
So I understand that Zimmerman makes that move. And it was a strong attack as well, because when he did that, O'Connor didn't respond because he was done, and the other people weren't really to the wheel of Bilbao yet either. So he just had to count on Bilbao not closing down Zimmerman. But in reality, well, Bilbao decided to close down Zimmerman. And he gets to the wheel, and all the rest is gone temporarily. There's a gap of like 50 meters, and I'm like, Bilbao has this. Because like, he's controlling every single attack so far. He's doing what a lot of guys actually wouldn't dare to do. Take so much on his plate in the final. So he must have either felt very strong, or he must have known his sprint is so much better that even if he's tired, he still beats the rest.
He was super strong, because when Zimmerman attacked, he had momentum advantage on Bilbao. And I thought Zimmerman's gone. He's like 68, 70 kilos, strong attack, got the timing pretty right. And Bilbao closed to the wheel pretty quickly. And like the gap exploded to the group behind us. So I was like, wow, Bilbao must be feeling $1 million.
Yeah.
And even he didn't even care about doing the lead out, because Zimmerman went to his wheel and Bilbao was just like, I'm just not going to pull. I don't care if O'Connor comes back. I don't care if Pedrero come back. So he played it really cool. Eventually, Zimmerman goes to the front. O'Connor does come back, but he's too late for him to sprint. Zimmerman starts sprinting from like 30 kph in the 53.11. He like is doing torque intervals, and Bilbao just immediately gaps him because he's in the right gear or in a better gear and had better legs. And Bilbao wins the sprint easily, which is just fantastic for him, for Bahrain. After what happened with Gino Maeder in the Tour de Suisse, Bilbao has been raising funds, I believe, to buy land to plant trees.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see it on his Instagram. I'm sure he'll post about it in his victory post tonight, or it's already on his Instagram if you want to check that out. Huge for Bilbao and the team, and he deserved it. And not just winning the stage, Benji, ahead of Zimmerman, O'Connor, Nalens, who, yeah, incredibly strong. Like, Nalens still won, was good in the sprint. Chavez, Pedrero. Bilbao moves into fifth on GC on 4:34 ahead of Adam Yates, Simon Yates, Tom Pidcock, Gudu, GC Kus, and Bardet.
Yep, so that is true. Both. That's a big move. It's a big move. It's what Mankies was trying into the top 10 and failed at. So we kind of expected someone to try and slip in this breakaway to try and do this. But Bilbao being the one jumping to fifth is a pretty major step. And like, we knew that Landa was already relatively not very close in GC, but this confirms to me that Landa should now be a super domestique for Bilbao. I would have never expected to see that in a race, and I'm not sure Landa will ever do it regardless of Bilbao being in fifth position, but he should.
I think Bilbao just does his own thing, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're both Basque, but are they mates? I don't know.
Landa should go in the breakaway in the same way and try the same thing, yeah. And they'll be in fifth and sixth in the GC.
And so, yeah, you can see now why Jayco were pacing back in the GC group. Nothing happened on the climb, really. Ineos paced defensively on the climb, the last climb, to try and limit the damage to Bilbao for Pidcock's GC. And then they also, Jumbo did the descent, and then Ineos took over in the last section and paced the group in. And then there was a sprint as well for, where was it on the stage? There was a sprint for 11th.
I didn't even see it.
Yeah.
Someone won.
Aaron Baru against Johannesson against Sturven. Court was like leaning on Vingegaard, trying to, it's like, bro, you should be in the break today. and got rolled. So eventually nothing happened on GC in the GC group, just Bilbao leapfrogging. Big win for him. And Bahrain, I've already said the revised GC. So yeah, anything else from this stage, Benji, other than I think this is going to happen again on stage 12. I think Jumbo and UAE, it's like two drunk guys fighting each other outside of a bar. Most of the swings are missing. And if someone says to you, who's winning this fight? You're like, neither. I don't know. They're just taking pieces out of each other in 40 degree heat. It's great for it was the first 90 minutes of this stage. Unbelievably good. Really recommend people go and watch it.
Fully agree. The thing about the stage as well is that I'm wondering how much the the exhaustion in this heat will influence the coming stages. Some riders will actually be like completely torched tomorrow. They've got the benefit of a parkour that isn't the most energy hungry, if that's a word. So that's one benefit. And it's also like, does this hit the sprinter teams a lot? Because let's just talk about it for a second here. We've got stage 12 from Rouen to Belleville en Beaujolais. That was amazing French and you know it. It's in total a 169 kilometers stage. No, I'm looking at the wrong stage. Fuck. I'm looking at stage 11. I'll let you do it. Sorry, I'm torched.
Yeah. So stage 11 tomorrow from... They're still in Clermont-Ferrand. How much money did this town pay? They got like four stages. It's 40 degrees in the middle of France. Alrighty. Clermont-Ferrand to Moulins, 180 Ks. It's flat for the first 27. And then we have rolling medium mountains again for the next 40 Ks rather. Got two Cat 4s. We'll see Palace and EF going for them, the one-pointers. It is not as hard as today at all. Like, it really does get easier, and there's no categorized climb in the last 60 kilometers. So I think this is actually... I mean, Vanderpool should get in the break on this one. This is like... and Van... Do you think Alpecin can control all day for Philipsen to win? Do you think Jayco and... Because the thing is, can the sprint, quote, the real sprinters teams, like Jayco with Groenewegen, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, Bauhaus and Bahrain, can they stop a break of 15 rouleurs going clear? Because if they go, you're not bringing them back. And I struggle to see how they'll control that at the start. And if Pedersen was jumping on the Limoges stage, aren't Trek also going to try jump in tomorrow and try to get Sturven and Pedersen in a break and take their chances?
It's possible, but I feel like we've sometimes overrated the inability of teams to chase the breakaway as well. And then you show up on a stage where suddenly there's only three breakaway riders and we're like, how did that happen? So yeah. Regardless, I'm going to go for a sprint. I'm going to go for Philipsen for this stage. But I will say that Groenewegen has been climbing very well. The fact that Groenewegen's team was pacing today says a lot that he's not incompetent when it comes to getting over hills as well. So I think on this stage, he's probably going to get over them as well. I agree that it's a possibility that today's the sprinter domestiques are completely spent because I haven't ridden in 42 degrees or whatever it is. So I can't tell you how terrible their form is now.
And they made the time cut. So Groenewegen, Jakobsen, Ewan, who got dropped very early and the stage didn't slow down for a long time. Wait, they all made the time cut.
For who did they pace then? Was it who? For Yates that
who?
Durbridge was pacing?
Yeah, for Yates GC.
Oh, okay. That explains.
Yeah. And Bilbao still finished ahead of him. But Yates will take time on him. It's like, yeah. Anyway, I don't have too much of a problem with it.
Nah.
If any of us really cared about Bilbao, they probably should have paced the climb harder. But because he took a fair bit of time on Pidcock. But
probably.
You're right. Philipsen will make the finish tomorrow. The question is whether the breakaway can be managed. I'll be curious to see what Jumbo Visma will do. I'd love to see Christophe Laporte freed. I feel like Laporte might even have better shape than Van Aert. I thought when Aert was pulling initially, I was like, maybe they go for Laporte. Because Laporte made that group two of 40 riders when Van Aert was dropped. Now, obviously, Van Aert tried to get in the break, but I would love to see Laporte get a chance in the breakaway tomorrow. But I'm going with Moss Pedersen from the break.
Moss Pedersen, you say? Is that
I
like
think
a plan?
He says he hates the heat, but he's won loads of stages in really hot conditions.
I think he's good in the extreme conditions that hurt other riders more, is my theory, including the very hot temperatures. So
I say he wins from the break. Solo, too.
Yeah.
By the way, he hits him on a little riser.
Fun fact, purely randomly, before I say my pick, Van Aert said that he felt pretty homeless. Hopeless, Jesus Christ. I mean, he felt pretty hopeless when he was dropped. It doesn't happen to him. Anyway, regardless of that, I want to talk about my stage winner for tomorrow, which is Philipsen, which I already said, but I'm confirming him twice over because I'm doing a double triple down on the stage.
Okay.
Philipsen's going to win the stage and no one is going to stop him.
Van der Poel might stop him. I think actually Van der Poel might. I'm not even joking. Don't you think they're going to try to give Vanderpool, like, you know, a chance?
I don't know, man. Maybe the stage after again in the same way as today.
Too hard for him, I think. So tomorrow's a good chance for Vanderpool from the breakaway. So we'll see. We'll see. I think it'll be a fierce fight at the start, and then it might settle down into a rhythm, but we'll see. It's going to be hot conditions again, so hot that even I think YouTube cut out our stream. Luckily, yeah. we record on the back end. The YouTube server's suffering in the heat. But anyway, maybe a bit cooler tomorrow. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll see you with the recap of Stage 11 tomorrow. Till then, ciao.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.